Welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, where our voicemail number is 844-SKEPTIC. I'm your host for today's episode. I'm Becky Friedman, and with me in the studio are Wesley and Meredith. How are you guys?
I'm doing great.
I'm doing okay.
It's kind of a neat day today. It's sunny. It's a little bit snowy. It's exciting to
have. It's a weird weather day.
It's exciting to have some of that really nice snow. It can be very cleansing to have it blanket our region, and even as we have little spots here and there coming in, it's still kind of funny to have it snowing.
It's pretty until it covers the streets too.
Well, it was just like beautiful and white when we woke up this morning. Yeah. It was quiet and the snowflakes were falling, and it's
the
February.
Deer were out walking around.
February is a good time for a little bit of snow here and there. It's definitely good. Now, you guys didn't happen to run into any body snatchers along the way, did you?
Can't say that I did.
I don't think so, no.
Maybe the snow sort of repels them. unlike what happened in Texas, because a Texas family has sued a funeral home for losing the body of their 25-year-old relative, raising the specter of misconduct by an employee who was allegedly into Satan. Julie Mott's body went missing after a 2015 memorial service and never arrived for scheduled cremation. During questioning, the family's lawyer inquired about a contracted embalming specialist's social media posts that suggested satanic interest. Mott's ex-boyfriend was also found to have trespassed at the funeral home and remains a person of interest in the criminal investigation into the body's disappearance. And while the Mott family had sued for $2.5 million, the jury actually returned with an $8 million judgment for mental anguish.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. So this is kind of a very terrible situation where...
I don't want to laugh. This is awful.
The body of your loved one has gone missing, and everyone has their own rituals that they use to mourn the death of beloved ones. Whether you believe that there's an afterlife or not, whether you want to hang on to the remains of someone after cremation, whether you want to bury them, whatever your religious beliefs are, if there's ashes to ashes, dust to dust type things going on in your particular cosmology, it doesn't justify, somebody stealing the body of your loved one.
I'm confused why they think the satanic guy stole the body. Just because Satan? Is that why? Because Satan?
I really have a feeling that's it. That's the only tie there.
So, as folks that have been involved in the satanic temple, is there anything about, bodily autonomy?
Bodily autonomy is like freaking huge in the satanic temple.
But it's your own body, right?
Your own body, not other people's. And, snatching somebody else's body would definitely violate those tenets.
So this is not aligned with the satanic temple then?
No, definitely not.
No, I mean, the ex-boyfriend has some issues there. I mean, he's a person of interest, let's say. They should be maybe looking at him.
I think that is the way that the criminal investigation is going, although this happened in 2015. So this is the civil side of things.
Right.
Yes, I believe that the funeral home was at fault, regardless of whatever personal hobbies and interests your third party contractors are into.
Right.
And just raising the specter of Satan. Are you aware that there is someone within your company or that you contract with who said something about Satan once on social media?
Oh, no.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was made aware that they haven't changed their passwords or keypad entry codes in, decades.
Ah, and that was what allowed the ex-boyfriend to actually trespass in the memorial service.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel terribly, terribly sorry for the family of Ms. Mott. But I can't help but, have some animosity towards these lawyers that say, oh, did you know that someone you contracted with, someone in your employ, is into Satan, whatever that means.
Yeah, whatever that means.
Yeah, it's just a scare tactic, and it worked, and it got them more money.
I wonder if they got more money because there's this specter of perhaps their daughter's body was used for
a ritual.
Satanic ritual.
Right. And so that gave you more mental anguish.
Yeah, because you don't know. These people are so afraid of the unknown of Satanism, knowing, what kind of rituals or Maybe she was defiled in the afterlife. I don't know.
I don't know either.
this coming from the lady who's wearing 50 Shades of Black today. This is awesome.
She's a little bit, you're a little bit sparkle goth I'm going on.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah, pink hair, but all black. And
yeah, I'm going to see a very special movie after Ooh. This today. So
yeah.
I think that there's a lot of folks that are really excited about the Black Panther film.
Yes.
Revolutionary it seems to be, how, you know, just positive and it is for representation of people of color, and just seems to be an excellent story. I haven't seen it yet, so we'll have to look forward to hearing your review, your spoiler-free review of that.
Spoiler-free. Yeah.
So from Texas all the way to the UK, because in terms of people knowing what it means to, you know, be a Satanist or be into Satan, there seems to be equal misconceptions about what it means to be a humanist or be into humanism. Because the UK Home Office has denied the asylum application of a Pakistani humanist because he did not identify Greek philosophers as humanist thinkers and could not describe any humanist symbols after admitting to being stressed. The immigration interviewer also rejected Hamza bin Walayat's application because he did not consider humanism to be a religion. That's the interviewer said, well, it's not a religion anyway. And the International Humanist and Ethical Union, along with Humanist UK, are vigorously protesting this determination. And a group of 120 philosophers have also signed an open letter contending that knowledge of Plato and Aristotle is not a reliable test for whether someone's a humanist. Mr. Walayat, who came to England in 2011 on a student visa, faces death threats from family members on account of his apostasy and his long-term relationship with a non-Muslim.
Wow. So, I mean, if he can't identify humanist thinkers or old Greek people just by the words they said, I mean, come on. How many Christians can really identify the things that Jesus said in the Bible?
But the flip side of that is Plato and Aristotle aren't really old humanist thinkers. You know, Plato himself, like, posited? Yes,
perhaps?
Posited would be the word I am looking for, about a divine creator. They're not really four thinkers of humanist thought.
I think that there's definitely things within Greek philosophy that then was focused on during the Enlightenment. It was the resurgence, you know, after the European Dark Ages, the European Enlightenment, that went back to those kinds of philosophies. But it was the thinkers of the Enlightenment who were consistent with humanist thought, saying we don't have to have the existence of a creator in order to abide by these particular ideals.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, though. Even if he had not named Plato and Aristotle as humanists, you have someone that's applied for asylum because their apostasy and their relationship with a non-Muslim person has put them at risk of mob assassination by family members in his native Pakistan. So even if you weren't a humanist, the apostasy alone, you'd think, should be enough to get him asylum. His life is at risk. And we see over and over again in Pakistan how apostasy or the accusation of blasphemy has led to mob violence against someone, whether or not they themselves have turned against their, you know, natal religion or anything like that.
I would think that the UK would have laws that would allow people in for just that reason.
Well, the asylum process in the UK seems to be that venue, but unfortunately, it seems to be up to the whim of this one Home Office interview. You know, the UK Home Office is essentially what our, you know, Homeland Security and ICE and, you know, Immigration Customs Services and things like that, and enforcement. But here's the thing. If you decide that you don't believe in a God and you align with a humanist philosophy, do you need to be highly educated in Western thought to say that you don't believe in a God?
No.
No.
Does saying you don't believe in a God and you don't believe in your natal religion put you at risk of assassination and violence in your home country of Pakistan?
Yes.
Well, I think that you guys are more insightful immigration interviewers than this UK Home Office person.
I just have this feeling that the interviewer is trying to play a game of guess who with him. And, you know, like, does your humanist have a higher power? Does your yes or no, and like, okay,
you're a humanist. Is your humanist depicted in rock sculptures? And yeah,
does your humanist have a beard? Does he wear glasses?
So here's the other thing, that in Pakistan, it's not just the threat of something. Blasphemy is punishable by death in Pakistan, and apostasy is blasphemous. And he is an apostate. He has left his natal religion. Being in Pakistan could open him up to the legal charges of blasphemy, which is punishable by death, let alone the threat of mob violence from family members.
Yeah, but nothing will happen wrong if he goes home.
No, certainly not. My goodness, it is really quite shocking. And what is your religion anyway, if it's not, you know, Muslim, if it's not Islam anymore? And he says, well, humanism is my religion.
Why does the default have to be having a religion?
Right.
Right.
Perhaps you can still be a threat even if you don't have a particular religion. And when you say, well, what is your religion? That's humanism. It's the answer that fits best. You know, it's like saying to someone who is bald, well, what color is your hair? Well, they're going to say I'm bald because that's the best description of what hair is, but they don't have any hair color there.
I could say invisible.
Invisible, perhaps. And I would say, well, that wrong answer. That's just the absence of hair. That's not a real hair color. Bald isn't a real hair color. Yes, sir. My point exactly. So for the Home Office interviewer to throw out his answer of humanism, saying, well, that's not a religion. Pick a different one.
That's absurd.
I am glad that we do have activist organizations and nonprofits that are really coming to bat for him. But as of yet, I mean, this happened the end of January, close to 3 or 4 weeks ago, and there's not really any movement that we see on his case.
Wow.
He does have one more general appeal, and I think that that's what the International Humanist and Ethical Union and Humanists UK are really pushing for, of saying, let's get this looked at again. Let's look at the process. It can't possibly be up to the whim of one interviewer. But as we know in the United States, a lot of what happens in immigration and customs enforcement can be up to the whim of one particular enforcement agent. We see that in our own country. We see that apparently in the UK as well. So let's go from Pakistan over to India, next door to India, because India doesn't have the death penalty for blasphemy and things like that. But only recently, well, let's just hear it. India's Supreme Court has ruled in a bail hearing that violence cannot be justified based on a victim's ethnicity or religion. This case stems from bail that was initially granted to a group of men for the alleged brutal beating and murder of Sheikh Mohsin, a Muslim. The individuals were granted bail on the grounds that Mohsin's religion provoked the perpetrators, who were highly incensed after having attended a Hindu nationalist meeting just prior to the assault and murder. The court declared that the fact that the victim belonged to a certain community cannot be justification for any assault, much less a murder. Guys, this just happened.
This is like a common sense thing, right?
Up until that point, if you just like, you know, if you thought that someone was, you know, cheating with your wife, you couldn't kill him because that's not a justification for murder. If you thought that, you know, someone had stolen too much from you, you can't go and mob kill them. But hey, you know what? Until now, if you were just incensed and provoked by someone of a differing religion, maybe it was enough to, you know, be considered in your bail hearings. Oh, it was, there were mitigating circumstances because you had hatred in your heart. I mean, what? This only just happened now.
Yeah, that's absolutely crazy that something like this could happen now.
It gets so much worse, though. I mean, during our meeting for the show, you brought up a wonderful point. I'd love to hear more about it.
Well, it when I was looking at this particular thing, it was based on religious grounds. And that's of interest to us as humanists and atheists. No, we don't think that you should be able to justify your killing of someone just because you were incensed that they were of a differing religion. But in the United States, we've actually had that for gay folks or for trans folks. And it's been called the gay panic defense. And it has only been outlawed recently in two states, California and Illinois. California was just in 2014 and Illinois was just last year. And what this defense said basically was it hasn't been used effectively in all cases, but It's if you were incensed that someone was gay and it was unknown to you before that, and you broke into a rageful insanity and killed them or assaulted them, you could use that claim of temporary insanity because you were so upset and distraught that you had discovered that the person that you were chilling with was gay or trans.
So it's just legalized homophobic murder?
Basically, this is what has been tried in states throughout the last 50 years. It was a defense that, like I said, didn't always work, but has worked in certain circumstances to lessen a sentence or to bring down charges to something like involuntary manslaughter. Or to lessen sentences saying, well, of course you wouldn't have killed someone if only they were normal, right? Mm-hmm. So in India, it's now, you know, normal is the, you know, Indian Hindu, and normal in this kind of case in the U.S. would be considered not gay. I mean, it looks like, you know, justification, like you said, Meredith, yeah. Justification for homophobic murder.
It's incredibly discriminatory. That is
a heck of a parallel to draw, and it's very accurate.
Yeah. And it was really surprising. I knew about the gay panic defense, and I figured, well, that's probably been outlawed as a you can't use that.
I'm sure that was out in the 1970s, but no,
come to find out, it's still a usable defense. Now, your jury or your judge might not let you use it in every circumstance, or they might not, you know, abide by it, or think it's anything but bollocks, but it's still legal in 48 of our states to be able to say I was so incensed.
I don't understand how that's not a hate crime.
I'm sure it's just that it's not allowed. There's no actual laws on the books for it, but you can use it because there is no law against it, I'm assuming.
Exactly. It's the kind of defense that you can try to bring up at your trials. But it's been used to varying success, and apparently in India, up until this point, it was used to varying success to lessen bail amounts, because you were just mad at someone who was Muslim or who appeared to be Muslim
because he was wearing a green pastel shirt and had a beard.
Right. So Muslim. In this case, they were just fairly certain that he was Muslim.
Yeah.
Turns out he was, which is besides the point in this case. I think that the parallel here, though, Wesley, you know, you said a parallel is there, and it's what are the things that can make someone feel so incensed that they break into an insane rage and beat someone other than religion? If you have a message that you surprisingly find out that the person you're chilling with is gay or trans or doesn't have below the belt what you assumed there to be below the belt, right? What are the things that would feed that kind of rage, that would trip someone into that kind of response?
Well, if we're talking about the sexual side of this, then I think that it would be the person was probably excited by this person, and they might have gotten a little way too excited.
So you think there's like a feeling of like shame and guilt there, like,
yeah,
that might be fed by their religious ideations that being gay is a sin, and maybe they're, yeah.
I'm trying to tiptoe around what I can say on radio.
No, I think that the kinds of messages that being gay is sinful or that it is wrong and abominable to, you know, feel sexual attraction to someone when you didn't realize that their undergarments might contain different things than what you expected. That's the kind of things that's reinforced by religion. It can be reinforced by very fundamentalist or orthodox religions. And we see in the United States, it can lead people to, you know, hate crimes against gay folks. And in India, when we're seeing a resurgence of this Hindu nationalism linked both with patriotism and the religion, you see young people that come from a meeting and are incensed to go beat someone to death with bats. And I think that the more that we can critically analyze what are the messages that religion is upholding that hold us back as a society, that can make us more violent or more prone to those kinds of of responses. And if we can root those kinds of things out, then I think that we would be far better off, even in a pluralistic society where many people have different religions.
Amen, Becky.
Well, I think that that's what we've got for this segment of Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC, if you think that there's something else that can incense someone to murder, and it's something outside of the realm of religion, I don't know. Toss a voicemail our way at 844-SKEPTIC. We'll be back after the break with some nice interviews about separation of church and state.
Has Ngatwe Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster Ngatwe Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an In God We Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
And welcome back to Ask an Atheist with me, Becky Friedman, today, but generally with Sam Mulvey. Wes is still in the studio. How are you doing, Wes? How's it going?
Lovely, thank you.
And we've got a special treat because we've got an interview with us today. This is Sally Buxbaum Hunt, and she's an activist from Missouri. She joins us today to share her experience approaching the Wentzville Mayor and Board of Aldermen about the large In God We Trust display in council chambers this week. How are you, Sally?
Hi, I'm doing well, thanks.
So it's really great to have you with us today on Ask an Atheist. You went to the council chambers about this large In God We Trust display there. How long has the Wentzville City Council displayed this?
Yeah, I think it was fairly recently, like within the last month or so. It's a brand new fancy city hall. And so as they rebuilt it and set it up, when they reopened it is when they put this new, very large sign right there in the center of the dais.
I got to say, that thing is awfully gaudy and just like 15 foot long. Goodness. So why did you decide to speak against it?
So, I've been an atheist my whole life, and I have always strongly been opposed to the mix of church and state. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's just a matter of the function and role of government. So, of course, everybody is allowed to believe whatever they choose to believe, but it's always really, really bothered me when government and you know, any type of public body displays God as if they're basically trying to say that you must believe in God in order to be a real American, a good American, and they're somehow equating those two things. And of course, we know there are lots and lots of us who are Americans who are just as legitimate and worthy of representation as everybody else who does believe. And so it's just very clearly a prejudice and discrimination against anyone that doesn't believe in a God from our government, or somebody, or anybody who doesn't believe in multiple gods, because it doesn't say in gods we trust. So there are also those people. But it's just ultimately the point that government should not be making that declaration that they believe in God we trust, when a lot of people simply don't trust or believe in God. So it's just not true.
And was that the main part of your message to the mayor and the aldermen?
Yeah, so I just got up there just to let them know that the function and role of government is to represent all people, we the people, and that it's not that a belief in God, it should not be what matters when it comes to the government, since they are there to represent all types of people, and you should never assume that all of your people that you're representing, because a lot of people just don't realize, they think that this motto, "In God We Trust," has been around since the founding of our country. And of course, yeah, I let them know that it became our national motto in 1956 during the Cold War, and it was created as our national motto with the purpose of promoting, you know, prejudice and hostility, animosity toward atheists, because it was to equate that godless commies, you know, that we Americans are not like those godless commies. So making that judgment that all atheists are bad people, like as if we're all, you know, commies were the bad guy or something like that. And because the mayor in Wentzville had been on TV talking about it, and he was talking about how this is our national motto and it's on our money. And he made some stupid joke that if I'm opposed to the motto, then I should give up all of my money that says "In God We Trust" on it.
Oh, yeah. None of us have heard that one before. Never, ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that I don't see "In God We Trust" on my Visa card. I'm just putting that out there. But So I was kind of curious what happened at the end of your comment, because that sure seemed to get interesting.
Yeah. So it was crazy. He had me escorted out by police, and it didn't make any sense. And I was not causing a disturbance at all. I went up there and I spoke calmly, respectfully, and I talked about that I have spoken with other people in Wentzville who are opposed to the sign, but who were afraid to speak out publicly because of the prejudice and discrimination against non-believers, against atheists and non-believers. And so he, after I was done speaking, he cut me off and he said that my 5 minutes was up, which, by the way, that was not true. When I timed myself after the fact on the video, it turned out that it was 4 minutes and 35 seconds, and he lied and said my 5 minutes was up. But so he cut me off and he says my 5 minutes is up. And then he says that basically he was implying that I was lying about other people in Wentzville, people who were opposed to the sign that I had spoken with, because he said, well, none of them are here tonight. You know, let it be known that this is just hearsay, that there are people in Wentzville who are opposed to this sign. And I said, are you accusing me of lying? And, you know, I responded to him with that. And then he got upset. And then he said, well, I'm going to have you taken out of here. And he had cops take me out.
If I'm not mistaken, didn't the mayor and some other person have a quick discussion asking if you had given your details, and they said that they didn't know where you lived, and which, if I'm right, that would mean that your testimony would be stricken off the record.
Well, so yeah, I don't live in Wentzville. I live nearby in Maryland Heights. So it's a couple towns over.
Okay.
But they knew that before I started speaking. Like he's known, because I had to submit a request online to speak.
Neat.
Yeah, so they knew that I lived in Maryland Heights. And so they don't have any policy that doesn't allow people to speak who don't live in Wentzville. But they, after I spoke, they wanted to make it abundantly clear to everyone that I am not a Wentzville resident, because they're essentially trying to make it seem as though nothing I said, you know, mattered because I don't live in Wentzville. But that's why when I spoke, I was very clear that, you know, everything I said, it's not about me personally. It's about the function and role of government. And so it doesn't change the legitimacy and validity of what I said, you know, just because I don't live in Wentzville, because that's, you know, that shouldn't even be relevant.
So is there a group or a group of individuals that can mobilize around this in the Wentzville area? I mean, what's sort of the climate like in terms of support for atheists and other non-believers?
Yeah, it's difficult in Wentzville. I have been talking to more and more people since the Friendly Atheist wrote about me and this incident in his blog, and I've gotten a lot of people who want to get involved, and that's helpful. It's difficult because Wentzville is a very conservative, very white, very Trump-supporting area. So definitely, it's an area that is hostile toward atheists and non-Christians. So it's tricky to find people who are willing to go public. And I've talked, this is what I talked about when I spoke at City Hall in Wentzville. I talked about this, how I've spoken with several people who are Wentzville residents who are atheists, but they are terrified to go public and to talk about being an atheist, because there is a lot of animosity, hostility, prejudice out there. And, you know, they're afraid of backlash, and they've already dealt with, you know, incidents here and there of Wentzville residents. And so it's one of those things where it's really, really hard to find someone who is willing to put themselves out there and doesn't mind that being known. Wentzville is just not, you know, they're not a super open-minded type of community when it comes to religion. So anybody that's listening to this, you know, we definitely are in need of Wentzville residents who are opposed to the In God We Trust sign, whether they're atheists or not, just anybody that understands the value of separation of church and state, that are willing to go speak at City Hall. Are the Board of Aldermen meetings are the second Wednesday of each month. So the next one will be March 14th.
I think that that's really good to know for Wentzville, but as well around the country, there is the In God We Trust America movement. One lady in Bakersfield, California, that's made it her mission to have these things installed across the country. And we've had our own fights in Washington State trying to get elected officials to understand the exclusionary practice that's, you know, patently there up on the wall. I think some of the most powerful testimony does come from a plurality of people, believers, non-believers, non-Christians that say, I do believe in God, but this doesn't represent me. And the writing is really on the wall when you have the, you know, so to speak, the elected officials and your other townspeople crowing about how proud they are of their godly sentiments. It really lays it bare that this is promoting a very distinct way of thinking and way of defining what it means to be American.
So I know that a lot of people could be some really great allies in this, from Muslims to Jewish people to, like Becky was saying, Christian people that want a separation between church and state. I did have one other question I was thinking about. In your upload of videos, you emphasized to police that this was a public meeting. Do you know what city or state laws in regards to individuals being barred from public meetings?
Yeah, I mean, basically, this is why I think the mayor wanted to make it seem as though I was creating a disturbance or something so that he could justify having me removed by police. So essentially, the mayor is able to have police take somebody out if he asked them to. It's kind of crazy, but, and that's what I said after they took me out. I said, is he the mayor or is he king? Because right now it's, you know, he's acting like he's king. So as long as he can spin it in a way that says, oh, you know, this person is creating a disturbance, you know, a disruption, they need to be taken out. So the only way to protest that is for, you know, for us all to be demanding answers. And there have been many Wentzville residents that have been doing that. And it's been interesting. We'll see what happens, because the mayor has essentially stopped responding now to these questions, and he's just trying to blow it off and say, well, she's not a Wentzville resident, but it shouldn't matter if I am or not. But he clearly wants to paint it as though, you know, I'm some, you know, crazy, loud, disruptive person. But that's clearly not the case when you watch the video. That wasn't what happened. Hopefully we'll just get more and more people that are going to attend these Board of Aldermen meetings, and that are going to be emailing the Board of Aldermen and the mayor and making their voices heard.
Yeah. Have you heard from the city since being escorted out of the meeting?
No, I haven't.
So they're mum on any further interactions or explanations that they might give you or responses to the dissatisfaction you have with In God We Trust.
The Board of Aldermen are saying that when it comes to me getting kicked out, that's on him. Like, they're not trying to claim that they agree with that decision. They're just saying, you know, he's going to have to answer for his choice. So I think they're distancing themselves from that. But when it comes to the sign, there are no plans at this point to take the sign down, and they're trying to just avoid that conversation. I know that part of the way they defend the sign is that they have said that, you know, it wasn't taxpayer dollars that paid for it. It was the Kiwanis Club, a nonprofit, that they paid for the sign. And one of the Board of Aldermen one of the aldermen is on the board of the Kiwanis Club. But, you know, that's kind of bizarre, too, that you think, okay, so a private organization can just pay for and hang their own sign on taxpayers' property, public property. So it's like, where does that end? Like, can we have a Coca-Cola sign? You know, I mean, at what point? That's kind of bizarre to me, too.
Now, I think you've been in touch with Robert Ray of the Original Motto Project, someone who's familiar to our listeners.
Yes.
What kinds of interactions or brainstorming are you doing with the Original Motto Project or any other groups?
Yes. And I was definitely going to plug him and that organization at some point here as well, because, yeah, he's awesome. And they've been really helpful. I just know that having him and having other people helping with this is nice to know that there's, you know, a bigger movement here and I'm not doing this alone. He talks a lot about the Original Motto being E Pluribus Unum. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, either that one or We the People are both a million times better, of course, than In God We Trust. But yeah, he's been really helpful. He edited the video and had uploaded it to YouTube. But yeah, he's been really, really helpful and really awesome.
How can people follow up with your activist pursuits?
Yeah, well, definitely if they want to find me on Facebook and get in touch with me, Sally Hunt is my name. My maiden name is on there on Facebook as well, Buxbaum, Buxbaum. If they just want to find me, if they want to message me, and, even if they don't live in Missouri, sending emails to the Wentzville mayor and the alderman would be very, very helpful. And I have all their email addresses I can easily, happily provide. And anybody who is local in the St. Louis area or, you know, the Wentzville area, for sure, especially Wentzville, if they can attend the Board of Aldermen meetings. Like I said, it's the second Wednesday of every month. It's at 6:00. That would be ideal, and I would be happy to work with them and coach them if they're nervous about speaking in public. But even if they can't do that, you know, again, just email, speaking up, talking to other people that they know in Wentzville, anyone who is opposed to this sign. I think it would be really helpful to have people who also believe, you know, who maybe are not atheists, but they understand the value of separation of church and state. I think that we need all types of people speaking up for that.
Well, Sally, thank you so much for your call to action and for joining us today. Sally Buxbaum Hunt is an activist from Missouri. She joined us today to share her experiences in approaching the Wentzville Mayor and Board of Aldermen about the large In God We Trust display in City Council chambers, in Alderman chambers. Thanks so much, Sally, for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll be back after the break with some more In God We Trust news and some separation of church and state issues locally and in other states. Hello, and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Wes is in the studio still, and Meredith's back.
I'm back.
It's a pretty interesting interview to have someone, you know, actually be escorted out of a public meeting for something that's still having to do with public and In God We Trust. We go to Wyoming now. Wyoming State Representative Sherry Steinmetz is sponsoring House Bill 133 in an attempt to get In God We Trust and state and national flags into every classroom, state government office, and public use building in Wyoming. The funding for all flags and signage would need to come from donations either to the governor's office or to each school district. After the bill passed its introductory vote, the House Speaker assigned it to the Minerals Committee before it goes to a full vote by the legislature where it is expected to pass. Along with passing HB 133, the Wyoming legislature is tasked with, solving Wyoming's $850 million budget deficit during their current four-week meeting in Cheyenne.
Well, I'm glad that they're, not wasting their time during this four-week session.
Maybe some of those, extra In God We Trust donations could go to, fill in a budget deficit or... No, sorry, never mind.
$850 million worth of In God We Trust signs? I don't think you can buy that many.
So what do you guys think of this Sherry Steinmetz sponsoring this bill? Do you think that she's been roped in by the In God We Trust America crew?
I don't think so. I think this might be of her own volition. I mean, I've done a little bit of research on this lady, and she is always in one of the top worst slots for people in her state.
Representatives. Worst slots in terms of what?
In terms of bills that she brings to the representatives to look at and try and pass.
So are we talking from a religious perspective here?
She's tried to put up a very anti-LGBT law before, which would have been the most strict in the country.
She's probably fairly, fundamentally conservative and is really pushing this out of her own volition then.
It's quite possible. I mean, she might have ties to our friend down in California, but I wouldn't be surprised if she brought this up because she just, believed in God and country so much.
Well, here's the thing. If she is anti-LGBT and she's highly religious, then does that square with the court idea that this motto, In God We Trust, is merely ceremonial deism?
No.
I got a feeling no.
When you have folks that are using this to push the linkage between patriotism, as Sally said in our last segment, what it means to be a legitimate American and to be godly or God-trusting. I really am looking forward to see what Original Motto Project does. I know that in some of our other states where they've proposed this, they say, okay, we'll raise money. We'll try and come up with the sign to comply with In God We Trust. But on the same sign itself, let's also try and educate a little bit about the history of the motto and E Pluribus Unum. And when did that motto actually get adopted?
And the history of the godless commies.
Exactly. And I think that would be really neat because you could have your American flag, you could have your In God We Trust, you could have your Wyoming flag, and underneath it you can have the why is this thing baloney, why is it BS, why
is it not representative of all of the people, here is why.
And exactly, you could say, hey, some people object to this being our motto because it is, arguably not inclusive. It is. I know, but who can see that honestly going on the walls of public school classrooms in Wyoming?
Yeah, I'm also really curious about the money that is going to be coming into the governor's office or the school district. I mean, from what I can tell, looking at this bill, there is no tie to. Saying this money has to go to the flags or the In God We Trust. It could just be used for whatever they want, so far as I can tell.
Ooh, so if, you make a donation to a school district and then what happens to it? Oh, that money just went into the general fund?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about the governor's office. Maybe he's running for re-election and needs some money. Here's this account.
I hope that there's some elections committee, state elections committee or federal elections committee oversight of that in particular. But you bring up a good point. If you have for schools, all of the donations go to the school district, your local Kiwanis or your local American Legion or your local atheist group wants to, put up signs that say In God We Trust with flags. And you're an administrator, you're a superintendent, your state is already underfunded. Your state has a budget deficit. You know, would you not be tempted to use that for, I don't know, new laptops or copy paper or crayons for the kindergarten, or maybe keeping, you know, your half an hour twice a week music class at the elementary schools? Is this really the best use of charitable donations to schools?
You know, when the state is knocking on a $1 billion deficit, yeah, maybe it's time to use any money that comes in for actual good schooling, good uses.
Well, if we only had this, that would be an excellent good use, because if we teach children to look at the flag and trust in God, then clearly everything else will fall into place, right?
Okay, sure. I guess that's how that works.
Well, you know, I'm hoping actually that there's someone that comes to their senses. Maybe in the minerals department, they just won't progress it on to
Omega. Yeah, what is the minerals department?
Maybe Wyoming State Legislature doesn't actually have an education committee.
No, I actually Googled this. It's the Department of Minerals, Economics and Business.
Okay, that still doesn't seem to do with schools.
Have no, it doesn't have to do with
schools
at all.
In Wyoming?
I don't know. Why is minerals?
I don't know. Is it because that's where Steinmetz is a committee member?
I'm going to assume that they have, like, you know, for the little tykes, they have the granites, and then the middle school is the quartz, and then you get up to the high school and they're the diamonds.
Diamonds.
Yeah.
Wow. So we'll see what comes from this Wyoming bill, and we'll actually see, if it does pass, how many school districts legitimately post this in every single one of their classrooms.
And how many school districts get new crayons?
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of crayons, yeah.
No, I mean, that's a lot of money to put flags and mottos into every
classroom. It just has to be a representation,
building.
An accurate representation of the flag of the state and of the country. And so it can be a color photocopy, you know, on a framed, you know, page or something like that. It could be something, a magnet on your, you know, whiteboard. it just says, you know, it has to be an accurate representation. So my classroom, of course, I display the flag, and then it's our state law that you have to hold Pledge of Allegiance, you know, flag salutes, and I have the pledge written underneath my flag, and in larger letters, the part of our state law that states that pupils so desiring shall recite it, and pupils not desiring to do so shall remain respectfully silent.
Oh.
So
that's... Do you get a lot of people that abstain from...
Almost all.
Really?
Almost all at this point,
awesome.
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, I won't say that it's awesome or not awesome.
That's...
because you're free to, as a student, recite the pledge as you see fit.
When I was in school, we all said it.
But I do.
I was in school, we were all forced to say it.
I want to emphasize that, you know, to my kids, that our state law is only that the school has to, you know, give everyone the opportunity to say it. School can't force you. You cannot be forced to say the pledge, recite it. You can't be forced to stand, even. But you can be forced to remain respectfully silent. So we'll see where Wyoming goes with this one. There's another church-state separation issue going on. This is a lawsuit down in Louisiana. A Louisiana state senator is celebrating a lawsuit. Celebrating! He's actually celebrating a lawsuit. That alleges egregious church-state violations for detailing the many ways in which his parish is Christian. Ryan Gotti called the 33-page lawsuit by Americans United for the Separation of Church and State amazing evidence that his district is a Christian parish, remarking that he couldn't imagine anyone moving into his area oblivious to their strong Christian values and 300-foot cross that is visible from the freeway. The suit alleges that the school district violates the Constitution's First Amendment Establishment Clause by permitting widespread use of prayer on school property during the school day and at sporting events, along with open Christian proselytizing by school officials. Whoa, this is way much more than our friend Joe Kennedy, assistant football coach over at Bremerton.
This is like Joe Kennedy on a lot of steroids.
On a 300-foot cross?
Yes.
He's blown up to 300 feet?
Oh, my goodness. He's just flaunting the law and just essentially daring anybody to come down there and say a thing.
It's really kind of bonkers that he's saying this is such a terrible lawsuit, but at the same time, it's amazing for how Christian we are.
We are so Christian that people are suing us. Woohoo!
Because you as a government are not supposed to be Christian.
Exactly. And as a government official, you should know that.
You're supposed to abstain from the endorsement of any particular religion or non-religion. This is something that apparently Ryan Gotti Bossier Parish down in Louisiana has either forgotten, never learned in the first place, or is willfully flouting, flaunting, ignoring. You think the third one?
The last one.
Okay.
It's definitely that last one.
Yet we're supposed to, as atheists and humanists and allies to other people who are non-Christian, we're supposed to swallow this argument that, you know, having a cross is merely just the generic symbol for memorial, or that In God We Trust is ceremonial deism, or a blessing, an invocation before.
With thoughts and prayers work.
I just have a feeling that, you know, Christian nation, and to his mind, nobody else really matters.
Yeah, I mean, if they're that, like, Christian in their parish, maybe they just think that's still the default for everywhere else.
I mean, I can see that you would think that that was the case, but the thing is that our United States is not permitted to endorse particular religions or establish religions over non-religions. You know, either the belief in general or specific Christianity. And this guy is so excited that they're specifically strong Christian valued individuals.
Well, and that they're praying in schools over the loudspeakers.
Oh, yeah. They said
mornings.
At every level
this
of school.
This is crazy.
You know, kindergarten through high school. And the schools haven't yet responded to the lawsuit at all.
No?
So the school hasn't responded, but you get this elected official that jumps in and say, this is so sad, they're attacking us, but look at all of the awesomeness, all of the Christian awesomeness that they've detailed in their 33-page lawsuit.
But that just makes this lawsuit so much easier to win.
You would hope.
It might take two appeals, you know, get it to a federal level. But, you know, I think this will definitely be a slam dunk once it's actually brought to a judge that isn't from the area.
I would hope so. We'll see where it goes, if it needs to be appealed, if it needs to work its way up the federal systems. You know, while the school district hasn't responded to this particular lawsuit, they had said in 2015 that they would respect, you know, the students' constitutional rights of all students and employees, you know, and they would want to preserve the constitutional rights. So you have that statement out in 2015.
And now there's a lawsuit in 2017. So that tells me they're not doing a very good job.
2018, Meredith.
Oh,
no. we're in the next year. Yeah,
I forgot 3 years. That.
Right?
Three years later, and now there's a lawsuit. So not only have they probably not done anything to respect people, they're sliding backwards because it's gotten worse.
So I really wish that we would be able to think critically about, you know, even if you disagree with it from a legal stance, which there really isn't a, you know, I mean, even if you still think that all of this stuff is just ceremonial deism and you've got a court case behind it, even if you ignore the mounds of evidence of people who are stridently Christian, you know, parading all of this God stuff around, you know, thereby supporting the, you know, connection that it's Christian. Even if you were to ignore all that, you would still have, from a moral perspective, the option to say, you know what, we don't want to do this because it is exclusionary. Yes, your whole parish, Bossier Parish, might be overwhelmingly Christian. Yes, they might love their 300-foot cross. But do you really, sir, want to exert tyranny of the masses over the minority?
Honest to God, a feeling he might.
Yeah, it sounds like he does.
I mean, you got a 300-foot cross in your backyard next to the highway. Yeah, I don't think you're really considering other people's feelings that much.
One of the things that's really worrying that we've actually talked about on the air before with Bridget is that there are these prayer boxes in schools. So you can, like, leave your little note, your little prayer request, and you can stick it in there, and then the you know, club will pray over whatever is left in there. Sort of like a student council suggestion box of, like, we should get, you know, bring back trail mix into the vending machines kind of thing, or our dances should switch from Friday night to Saturday night. Except instead of a student council, student government suggestion box, it's your little request for prayers. And
my goldfish is sick.
We'll add him to the prayer list, Meredith.
Thank you.
So, you know, Bridget had talked about that the school that she had worked in had started this and had used, you know, academic class time to have students from that club go around and, you know, see if there were any prayer requests, and was able to put a stop to that because it is the unconstitutional endorsement of religious practice by a school. You know, kids are allowed to pray of their own will. They're allowed to gather, but it cannot be with the support of the administration or facilities or anything like right. that. So, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like in Washington, where we might have these little things here and there, maybe one teacher made a kid stand up to say the pledge. Maybe one school, you know, initially puts in some prayer boxes. But at the same time, we're not Bossier Parish in Louisiana that has, you know, overwhelming use of prayer at every level of education. And at least here, we don't seem to have an elected official that says, I hate this lawsuit, but it shows how awesomely Christian we are.
I guess we are lucky in that respect.
Yeah.
We totally are lucky. But, you know, I think that it calls for a continued vigilance to look for where are there violations of this value that we have as Americans and as humanists, you know, with the separation of church and state. And I think that it's really important anywhere we are, whether we're in the UK or in Pakistan or in Louisiana or in Texas or in Washington or in Missouri, to be able to say, what are the values that we want to uphold? Do they align with our laws, and if not, let's try and change them. This is Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I was your host today, Becky Friedman. Thank you, Meredith, for joining us.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you, Wesley.
Thank you, Becky.
And thank you to Sally Hunt for joining us in our second segment. We hope that no one else who wants to testify to their particular elected officials ever is thrown out for being disruptive. We want you to be disruptive in the ways where we disrupt those unjust laws and we call out violations of separation of church and state. You can email us at questions@atheist.radio. Give us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. Tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA. We will see you guys next week.